seat. Take a seat. The idea of chanting is a devotional connection with the Buddha Dharma Sangha for the Buddhist point of view. But generally, when you chant, you connect with your body, speech, mind, completely, totally connect with your spiritual. And any type of spiritual is okay as long as it's a spiritual. As long as it's a spiritual, it's all good. And spiritual, so chanting is important because it actually touches with your body and speech and your mind. I guess all body, speech, and mind somehow touches, interact with the chanting. Chanting is important and part of the Buddhist secret mantra. It's a secret because most people don't understand and they don't believe it. And so it's a very secret. You won't understand or benefit well. And it's a secret because it's a very powerful voice, the da called sound. It's a so powerful and sound, it shakes you, it moves you, it rolls you. So which means what's happening in your body, speech, mind is balancing negative emotions and compromising with the mantra sound, make everything more settled down or more balanced. Some people might say, you're just wondering, because you're wondering after wondering what's going on here. And every time when you're wondering in your mind, something happening. The problem is you just don't know what's happening. But there is something happening. And what I like to tell you, it's a good thing happening. It's not a bad thing happening. When you chant the mantra, you're wondering what's happening here. You're wandering around, Emaho, Ngomsar, wondering, and so speechless, something happening. There is chanting going on. There is a power of the mantra. Blessings of the mantra is connecting with you, which is very good for everybody. So it's a sense of purification. It's a sense of reconnecting your spirituality. It's a sense of a balance rest of your life into spiritual. So recite one more time. We're going to do Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Buddhaya. Everybody, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Namo Dharmaya.
Namo Buddhaya. Namo Dharmaya. Namo Sanghaya. Pardi Tsovalama Rinpoche Dage Chivara Pime Dinyod
from this book. We're going back to heartfelt advice. Book. Those of you don't have, you should get one so I get rich. No, just joking. I don't get rich. But anyway, if you have that book, you're supposed to bring every Sunday. It's an ongoing study, that book. And if you have any question, now raise your hand in this book. If you don't, then I have to pick up one. There are several books that are available, and those of you believe that this book is helpful and useful for your practice guideline book, it's good that you should get the book and also spread around. In other words, when you finish, you can loan them and give them somebody else to let them read. Also, there is a meditation book that written by Lama D. Dorje, and there is a Mahamudra book, and there is an autobiography book. What I'm trying to tell you is that those are good gift for people you think they need. People you think that they need. They are ready for read those books and put it into practice. It's a good gift for Christmas gift, birthday gift, things like that. Reason I'm saying that is books contains some information, some knowledge, some wisdom that is beyond price. And you give something beyond price, it's good, in my opinion. And also, if you believe that the Buddha Dharma makes a big difference in your life, and you want somebody also need help and you like to help and you don't know how to help, best way is let them read a book. Eventually they connect with the Dharma. So if you believe that, then there is nothing hidden agenda. All you want is them to be happy, healthy in their life, and especially spiritual long journey. So showing spiritual journey, if you can do, is the number one gift. Far more powerful and far more valuable than a material gift. Although unenlightened beings, a material gift is the highest gift. Anything else is just non-exist. I understand that part too, how you feel. But anyway, material is not only everything. There is a happiness, there is a spiritual, then there is a life after death. There are all kinds of we need to think about. It's not that like a food you eat and clothes you wear and something you can hide out and when sunset. And the sun goes down, you need to somewhere hide out. I guess all living beings are doing the same. Not only human, but other living beings that have the same feelings, same doing that. So, I suppose I'll pick up the paragraph here some. Self and selflessness. This is a page. Make sure I don't make the mistake here. 87. Self and selflessness. So we're going to talk about today self and selflessness. Self, it's a Western students are probably thinking about when we say self, you're talking about your ego or yourself. Whatever the idea of self is that you have. Self and selflessness. Buddhists talk about selflessness. Just because Buddhists talk selflessness doesn't mean you have realization selflessness. You have to have a realization or understanding completely about the selflessness. So let me read this. As genuine Mahayana practitioners, we combined bodhicitta and aspiration prayer to form our daily practice. To start with these sentences, this paragraph, Mahayana practitioners, we're talking about not just practitioners, Mahayana, a great practitioners combined with the bodhicitta and aspiration. Bodhicitta means altruistic, or you can just say love and compassion. Bodhicitta. Aspiration prayer means you wish all beings are happy and a cause of happiness. That's your wish. If you have one wish that you can grant, that's your wish. You want everybody happy and a cause of happiness. Who can do that? Only Mahayana practitioners can do that. The other practitioners seems like they can do something, but they're thinking about much less than that. Their practice is less than that. Only Mahayana, the second turning of the wheel of Dharma by Lord Buddha, Mahayana being presented. So Mahayana teaching came from Buddha Shakyamuni, and it was a second turning of the wheel of the Dharma, Mahayana. So here, Mahayana practitioner combined bodhicitta, aspiration, prayer to form our daily practice or your daily practice. So every practice they do, they combine with these two type of ingredients. Do you have that or not? This is something we need to ask ourselves. If you do, you may be Mahayana practitioners. If you don't, maybe you listen Mahayana teachings. Reality, you are not a part of the Mahayana practitioners. If either one of these ingredients is lacking, we are like a one-winged bird try to fly. One-winged bird try to fly, not very successful. And one leg human, not very successful walking. These days, there's artificial wood, plastic, all kinds of things, piece of wood, piece of plastic, all kinds of things. But you're using two. Even if it's artificial, you're using two. You don't use one. If you have only one, it will be very difficult. You can't get too far. So one of these two, which two? The bodhicitta and aspiration prayer, these two. If one of them lacking, then it's like a one-winged bird trying to fly. In order to benefit limitless sentient beings through bodhicitta, the great compassion, we must completely let go of our own selfishness. Unenlightened beings, human beings, we practice selfishness, not just only one lifetime, countless lifetime we practice. In other words, since you birth until you died, the majority of your practice is selfishness. Let's say, I need a friend, I need a money, I need a car, I need a lunch, I need this, I need that, I need a good parents, I need a good relatives. List is go on and on, and you don't have time to listen, I don't have time to talking at that point. We have to stop somewhere. It's all coming from selfishness. 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 I. You know, every one of you, most of your concern is the whole world out there. Most concern is your own benefit, your own comfort. It's all about selfishness. Whether you hear from me or not, it does not make any differences. It's a statement that it's all about you. It's all about you. I, my. Even you use a my, it's go back to I. So we must completely let go of our own selfishness. That's very hard, because since beginningless time, entire your life, you practice a selfishness, and suddenly, hey, somebody comes up and says, that's wrong. We have to change whole thing. That's very hard. And that might be one reason Buddhism is not there, not many numbers. Or at least our eyes, we don't see too many. Because it's a really powerful practice, and most people will not able to handle it. Simple is that. Simply is that. Most people not able to understand well because it becomes secret. It's not because a secret, it's something they're hiding from you. It is you are hiding yourself. You can't really get into it because you can't really understand it. So it's not your fault, but in a way, it is ignorant, is you blame, not knowing how to understand correctly. So it says, we must completely let go of our own selfishness and fully embrace self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice is all enlightened beings on planet Earth that seems like this. Self-sacrificed lot. They did not accidentally falling from sky on earth, and then they are turning the wheel of Dharma. They have to earn, they have to sort of like gain and discovered and self-realization, and they really sacrificed a lot. Whereas the 21st century today, Everybody refused to sacrifice anything because they worry that that your comfort, that your boundary may be somebody invading. You don't want to sacrifice anything. In other words, you don't want to pay anything. You want the thing, the wisdom, the Buddha's wisdom. You want that, but you're not going to pay anything because paying is not what you like to do. You like to get it and without sacrificing anything, without changing, without compromising anything. You don't want to compromise anything. That's the idea. That's the notion of 21st century, today's spiritual practitioners. I almost can speak all followers of spiritual in the universe have the same dilemma. But I'm not omniscient that to speak for everybody, you know. But I have a feeling, I have some sense of understanding that everybody faces same way. It's also called followers of the blank. It's the B-L-N-K, blank. Blank faith. Followers of the blank faith. By the way, they are not bad. As long as they believe they are following something, it's all good. It's all good, but the one problem is if somebody asks you why you follow, you go hit on your head, say, oh, let me think why I follow. My friend told me they are good. My parents are doing that, and they make me to do that because I go a few times there. Next thing, I'm going there every day. I don't know why. Stuff like that. Something like that. So they are not perfect reason, by the way. And they have some kind of reason, but not very good reason. Once we have set a foot upon the Mahayana path, so he says, fully embrace self-sacrifice means in order to get something, you have to sacrifice something. In order to get a little bit, you sacrifice a little bit. In order to get a big piece, you sacrifice big piece. That's my advice. So the size of understanding, wisdom, connection that you're looking for, size of that you sacrifice also. Your body, speech, your mind is you need to sacrifice. So it says self-sacrifice. Once we have set a foot upon the Mahayana path, we go into Mahayana shrine room. We go into Mahayana tradition. Then it says the degree to which we can claim to be a true Mahayana practitioners is directly proportional to the degree to which we are capable of completely abandoning the idea of self and embracing self and embracing self-sacrifice in order to benefit others. The size of the ego has a lot to do with your maturity and your understanding spiritual. So the more your ego is bigger, the less your understanding all living beings. Or you can say less benefiting limitless beings. The less that you have ego, the more benefits available for all living beings, including ones are moving, ones are not moving, ones are flying, ones not so flying, ones are visible, ones are not so visible. Funny part is visibles are 25%, invisibles are the 75%. So the invisible means our eyes, what we can't see is the 75%. We are okay with that because we're busy with the 25% what we see. That's a funny bat. But it says something is better than nothing. So we have a little bit of things sort of blurry, but not too clear what we see. 25% of all living beings that we can actually interact and see it. The numbers are way too much of things we don't see, and they exist, and we share. We share the space, we share everything, yet we just don't know who we're sharing with. Very good. Once our confused notion of self has ceased, and our every action forms part of our Mahayana practice to benefit all sentient beings without exception. Exception, no exception. Unenlightened beings, we are difficult dealing with the few or even dealing with ourself. It's a big task, difficult. Your own negative emotions, your own anger, emotion, your own grief, your own suffering, pain, your own stress. You're dealing with your own, it's a plenty, and most people can't handle well. So how can you handle more than one, two, three, four, five? That's even harder, right? But here we're talking about Mahayana practitioner to benefit all sentient beings without exceptions. They don't leave anybody behind. They include everybody. So if somebody can do that, what kind of heart, what kind of mind that person should be? Can you imagine? Mahayana, great vehicle, great mind. The big mind. The big mind is a universal mind. He can handle all living beings without exceptions. With the small mind, you can't handle your own problems. Forget about a limitless being, your family friend. You can't handle your own mind. That's the difference between you, without exception. Then Buddhahood is attained. The day you can handle all living beings totally, completely, without exception, with altruistic mind. And your selfishness is completely ceases, disappears. And Buddhahood is attained. When we will not attain the realization by simply hiding from the rest of the society. I know the people hide a lot of things. They think they are hiding, and they think it's a safe place to hide. But you know, there is no place to hide anything. I've been told that the modern technology knows every day which shop you go. And which gas station you go, and how long you drive your car, they already monitoring. They already know where you go, what you do, what you do, everything. But that's a modern technology. But we're talking about the eyes of the Buddha's Bodhisattva. You don't have any place to hide anything. And in fact, you're showing everything you're supposed not show. You're showing that before even they see you, they see everything you're supposed to hide from them. It's the other way around. But you know, you don't know that happening. And that's good. That's very good. Keep it that way. So it says we will not attain the realization by simply hiding from the rest of the society. There are several different ways of hiding. One, your negative emotions, your faults, you hide from your family, friends, or society. Pretend you are really good person. We haven't worked on that part yet. But pretend you're a good person. And you look good person. You reveal to be a good person, you hide. And then some of them, they say, for the Buddhists, they say, oh, I do retreat. I meditate. How long? 2 years, 3 years, 6 years, I meditate. 10 years, 20 years, I was meditating, hiding. You know, if you are meditating and hiding from society, if it's a real meditation practice, you don't have to hide anything at that point, number one. But if your body is hiding for retreat inside the retreat cabin and your mind is all over, that's not so retreat, by the way. That is, your body is hiding from the society. Nobody see it because you are hiding in a cabin up the mountain somewhere. But your mind is all over in the street. So therefore, that's not meditation. That is what really called your hiding. You're hiding your body. But your mind wasn't in a meditation practice at all. So that goes with the retreatants also. Some retreatants have fall into that category too. Hitting in a seclusive retreat, you have to have a, your mind have to be hitting in the seclusive retreat, not only your body. Mind and body both need to be there. But one of them is traveling around, then it's not so retreat. Our mind itself must change so that self-cherishing is released and the self-sacrifice is embraced. Sacrifice is very good. Sacrificing is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Like when you hear you sacrificing, sounds like bad. No. Let's say if you fail to sacrifice, if you married, and both have to sacrifice some part of their habitual patterns, otherwise what happens is the relationship won't go too far. So sacrifice, when you sacrifice, both sides sacrifice in order to get along. For Dharma, for practice, meditation, and realization, understanding, the transmission, the pouring into you, it needs a major sacrifice. If you don't major sacrifice, you're not going to get what you think you're going to get. Because simply, you didn't ask for it. When I say you didn't ask for it, means you didn't facilitate what it takes to comprehend, what it takes to handle the transmission. So, self-sacrifice is embraced. We need to embrace the self-sacrifice. Even two people fighting, if one person it's refuse to fight back, and you will just say, I'm sure it's my fault and I'm sorry for you. You sacrificing your self-ego. Let other persons win, and you lose. You say, I'm sorry. When you do that, you are major sacrificing yourself, your ego. It hurts your ego, but you will do it anyway. You're sacrificing. And immediately the other person, if you refuse to fight, what they're going to do? Kill you? Maybe these days they do, but because the human right thing is the bare arm or whatever, I don't know, they're talking about guns are so available that not only one, you might have several in your room. So it's time for you to use one of them, you know. So, see, I noticed a third world country where I came from, shooting gun is happening once a year somewhere you hear, or most times you don't hear. I was a 9 year in a university, in a Sanskrit university. There was a one time somebody shot and killed. But I don't hear every day for a newspaper or anything like that. So it's a rare, because the first thing, they can't afford the gun. If they manage to afford the gun, they have to hide it so nicely that nobody can see it, because the government figured out you pay big money and you lose gun. Maybe you put in a jail for a while. So therefore, you really don't have any gun. So do people fight? Do people have a disagreement? Yes, they always have disagreement. They fight. But what you're going to do? Hand? With each other? It takes a while to kill somebody. And the kids don't shoot a gun to the parents. Parents, when father or mother little bit drunk, and next thing they grab the gun, shooting their families. That doesn't happen over there. They do have sometimes violence, but there's no life threatening at all. The worst thing can happen is a little bruise on your face. That's all. It's a sign of you receive some blessings from your family. Whoever is stronger, you know. And they team up sometimes, two fight for the one, or three against one. They do that. This is not, I'm saying they don't fight. They do fight it. But the killing? But I guess it's a good way to cut down the number of the people for the population. So I don't know about the gun part, but it's too much. And in some ways, I feel like I wish we don't have any guns except the police. The government protectors, but no guns, because then it's not available. Nobody have shooting each other, their families, just because they get angry a little bit. Anyway, perfect realization cannot be attained until the Mahayana practitioner's mind is completely purified of three poisons of passion, aggression, and ignorance. So they say, what is my homework, Lama? After you listen Dharma for 30 some years, you still couldn't figure out what's your homework. We have major problem, by the way. Of course, none of you in that category, but so your homework will be work on your desire attachment. See, you can reduce it. Desire attachment, wanting and needing. Next part is work on your anger, jealous, hatred, or envy. There's a lot of fancy words, but some of them just enough. Some of them. And the last one is work on not knowing. Who you think you should blame when you don't know right from wrong or wrong from right? Who you think you should blame? The God? Or you should blame your parents, which a lot of you do. I think you can blame because genetically you didn't get a good genetic like from parents. But sometimes they blame anybody that you can. But anything, blaming is not a solution. Blaming other is not a solution. Blaming yourself is not a solution. Then who you should blame is you blame you didn't do homework well. Means if you're smart and intelligent, you should figure out. Regardless, whatever situation is, you figure out. If you think you are smart, You think you're intelligent, you figure out. And why we don't know everything? Why don't we don't see everything? Why don't we hear everything? So all senses have limitation. All the senses, eyes consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, just hearing consciousness, they have limitation, special for humans. Or as you get older, maybe it gets worse. It's not funny. I'm laughing because it just hits me. Finally, we must make aspiration prayers powered by faith and devotion. We need to increase our faith. We need to increase our devotion. Devotion, faith is the core or the root of realization of Buddha Dharma. In other words, the faith and the devotion is we all need to work on. One way to find out that is how much devotion do you have? How much faith do you have? How much faith do you have towards your spiritual? Whatever. Here we're talking about Buddhism, but you pick any religion, how much devotion do you have? How much faith do you have? And why? You need to figure out yourself. Why? So, but if there is a weak on any of devotion or faith, then you need to work on that. That we may be showered by a rain of blessings that bathes us in a fruition of the transmission of Buddha Dharma. How are we experiencing blessings of shower from Buddha Dharma Sangha? When you are experiencing richness of devotion and faith, the rain of blessings and transmission pouring into you. It is not invisible. It is a powerful experience, not something somebody tell you and you have to go for that. Not like that. It's a personal connection. In fact, you will not ever to put on a word to explain anybody, because the way you're experiencing is a very personal. It's an individual connection. So it's not like any word that you use may not be qualified to describe that. Or there's no words to describe. So that type is when you completely discover the self, and selflessness is discovered completely. And fulfillment of bodhicitta, the altruistic, loving kindness, compassion, and fulfillment of aspiration, prayer. To do that, you need to work on devotion and faith. The richness experience of devotion and faith brings rain of blessings and transmissions into you. It is something beyond the words can describe. And there will be no word, but you like to explain. But you fail, that you can't find a word to explain. Because there's no equivalent words can even close to describe what you experience. So, that will be the fruition of transmission of Buddha Dharma. And that is the end of the chapter 87. I think I should stop here and we're going to meditate a little bit before we forget the whole thing.